Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Okay, this class is supposed to start at 10 a.m. Try to be here on time so we can start timely. Okay, we're going over this paragraph again. And that's it. If you have anything to say about it, say it now. We can't spend the rest of our lives in one paragraph. I still don't have it perfectly figured out. So if you have anything you can help me with, let me know. This one sentence has still got me somewhat puzzled. But let's try. Atrochite Siddhe Shaktya Bhavaha Kruta Kim Sangati Grahaka Vyavaharasya Siddhe Bhavat Tatrapi Karya Samsargitvad Va. The response to this lies in a question. Why should an account of settled fact lack denotive power? Okay, now, I'm afraid we're going to have to look at that statement, make sure we understand what it means and whether it's said right. Siddhe Shakti Abhavaha Kutaha. Shakti Abhava, there's absence of Shakti in Siddha. All right, Siddha is an adjective, what's the noun? What is supposed to be Siddha here? Yeah, it's vacuum, it's not word. Although, you know, oh, sorry. What is Shakti? I'm asking, what has Shakti? What is Shakti, first of all? Okay, ability to convey meaning, or another phrase, another way to say it, denoting power. What does denote mean? What's the difference between a denotation and a connotation? This goes back to Aristotle. Denotatum and connote and denote, these are Latin equivalents of the words that Aristotle used. Aristotle, the disciple of Plato. That's where it comes from. Classical Western philosophy is largely based on what Aristotle said in his books. So what's connotation and denotation? Denotation is the strict meaning of a word, like, how is it defined by Aristotle? What's the denotation of a word, according to Aristotle? Anybody study Aristotle? Nobody? Okay, what do you think he might have said? What's the denotation? Do you know what denotation means? You say the meaning, but what? How do you define the meaning? How did Aristotle define it? Okay, it's all the things that the word refers to. It's the collection of everything the word refers to. It's like the scope of all the things it refers to. Like the word cow refers to all the cows. Doesn't leaves out the horses, but it includes all the cows. So the denotation of the word cow is all the cows in the world. What's the connotation? If I say, you pig, what kind of connotation does that have? Negative, yeah. There's a negative emotion attached to it. And I'm implying bad things about you by saying that. So that's connotation. You know, more than just what the word refers to, it's the attached ideas, what it implies. First of all, I call somebody in this room a pig. Not true. You all have two legs, not four. And your nose has come out this far. So you're not pigs literally, but I mean something by it if I call somebody a pig. Implications. That you have certain qualities. I'm sorry. I'm not referring to anybody, but I'm just saying theoretically that someone has qualities that a pig has. It's a metaphor. Um, That is connotation. There's some emotional implication behind what you say. Denotation is just strictly what it refers to, what the word refers to. Okay. Especially, it gets different connotations when you start talking figuratively. When you're talking literally, you just deal with the denotation. Okay, so I think calling this denotative power is okay, but people may not be familiar with it. But at least it's correct. Is that okay? Now, okay, now we know what denotative power is. It's also just the ability of a word to refer to something. Okay, city, what you say city is a vakya. It's a statement, a sentence that is going to lack this ability. Now, actually, in the theory of language, when they talk about shakti, they're originally talking about the shakti of words. The grammarians and the poets talk about the shakti of words. Words have shaktis. And then you put words together into sentences, and then the whole sentence has a shakti. But in this peculiar theory, this anvaya abhidana, first you put the words together and only then they have meaning, right? The meaning is only there when the words are together in a sentence. Separately, the words don't have any meaning. That's the theory of the Prabhakaras, all of them, both sides. So, therefore, they can talk about sentences having shakti, even though originally it's words that have shakti, but they never consider the words separate from the sentences anyway, these Prabhakaras. So we're asking, why is there lack of ability to refer to something in a statement, a sentence that states a fact? Or why should an account of settled fact, that means a sentence that says something about settled fact, lack denotive power? Are we saying that it lacks denotive power? Are the Prabhakaras saying that? Where do they say that? No, only the radicals? Do they say it in the previous paragraph? Let's say that only. Okay, literally it says, and it is the radicals who say, Karya eva arte vedasya pramanyam nasiddhe. That's what they said. The Vedas have authority only in matters of something to be done, not in matters of established fact. It's not that when the Vedas say ice is melted by fire, that it's not true. It is true, but it's not authoritative. It makes no difference for the Vedas to say that. It's just icing on the cake. We know that from science and from our own experience. We don't need Vedas to tell us that ice is melted by fire, or that Vishnu is the Supreme Lord. You can know that from other evidence. That's not the purpose of the Vedas. The talk of the Absolute Truth is just icing on the cake. It's not significant. That's the general Jaimini view, Mimamsaka view. So, okay, in that sense, that way, it doesn't have denotive power. It doesn't say anything important. It doesn't say anything that really has any significance, any value from the Vedic, from the Mimamsa point of view. It says something, but it's, you know, so what? It doesn't matter that it says that. Like I'm giving a lecture on Tattva Sandarbha and say, hey, look at that fly on the wall. It's true, but it's irrelevant and serves no purpose. Okay, that's what we mean. There isn't any shakti in a statement of fact. It's got no power to tell us anything that's worth knowing, that you need to hear. It may be true, but it's useless. Yes? Well, no, a statement is a sentence. A word can refer to individual things that are there. That's citta pada. But a citta vakya is a statement of fact. A whole statement, a sentence. And we're talking about here about sentences. We're not dealing with words separately because the Prabhakaras don't do that. They believe you can only talk about the meaning of the words in the context of the sentence. Okay, that much makes sense? Any problems with that? At least we know, okay, what the conservatives are saying now. You said, they're telling the radicals, you guys said that statements of fact don't have any denotive power. They don't say anything that is worth hearing. It's like New York Times. You ever seen the New York Times newspaper? The motto is all the news that's fit to print. So there may be other things to say, but they only print the news that's fit to print, that's worth hearing. So the only things that are authoritative in the Vedas are the things that are worth hearing, that there's any use in hearing it. There's no use, according to the Mimamsakas, in hearing that the absolute truth is the reservoir of pleasure. That's okay, but it's in the category of the comic strips. There's no comic strips in the New York Times, no comics. You know, they don't have comics in the New York Times because they don't consider it fit to print. It's not of any real serious value. Okay. Okay, so the question is, why is it that there's lack of denotive power in a statement of fact? Then the conservatives propose two possibilities for consideration. Now, usually when you make a choice of A or B, you're assuming that there's no C. It's got to be A or B. In this case, I don't think that's true. You could come up with a third possibility. I don't know why not. But at least these are the two most obvious possibilities, and both of them are going to be shown to be defective or not true. Okay? So here's the first one is, Kim sangati grahaka vyavaharasya siddhe bhavat tatrapi karya sansargi twad va. Is it because in a settled fact there is no activity to enable us to grasp the connection between words and what they denote? Or is it because a so-called settled fact is also connected with something that needs to be done? Now, I added the words in brackets, so-called. It's what you call a statement of fact, but actually it's also connected with the karya. So let's say there are no really statements of fact. They're all statements are connected with something to be done, indirectly. Okay, let's look at the first one. Is it because in a settled fact there is no activity to enable us to grasp the connection? And I put in brackets the connection. The sentence just says sangati, connection. Sangati in Vedanta, the commentaries try to identify the sangati. And that means the connection of the words with the sentence, this sentence with the one before it and the one after it, and with the whole chapter and with the whole book. You know, what's the relevance? The connection in that sense, logical connection. But here we're talking about connection, I put in brackets, between the words and what they denote. We're talking about that shakti. And the sangati is the same thing, but it's called connection, between the words and what they denote. Is that okay? Now, we say there's no vyavahara. The radicals are saying there's got to be a karya anvaya, a logical or syntactic connection with something that needs to be done. Here we're talking more generally just about vyavahara, any activity. Even if it's not an injunction, but just a description of something happening. Because the idea is you need an activity to enable us to grasp the connection. Like, you need to see the boy go get the cow. When you see something happen, then you have this extra linguistic evidence. You don't know what the words mean, but after you hear the words, you see the boy get the cow and bring it. And that you can understand. Even a baby can understand bringing the cow when he sees it. He's been drinking the cow milk ever since he was born. He knows what the cow is, and he can understand. Even though he can't say the words or understand them, he knows what the activity is. He recognizes it. On that evidence, he can identify. He can say, okay, whatever this gibberish is, bring the cow, gamanaya, it must mean, do this thing that I just saw, bring the cow. So there's an activity that was witnessed, and that let the boy grasp the connection. Grasp means to catch it, or to recognize it, and this is the pratimaka graha, grasping it for the first time, learning what the phrase means, what the sentence means. An activity let him do it. If there wasn't any activity, according to this theory, he'd never learn what the word means. You got to see something happen, somebody do something, and then you can learn what the sentences mean. It doesn't have to be injunction. Injunction's involved, but you need some activity to demonstrate what's happening. Yes.
It seems like because it's amongst themselves, they're arguing in a way that as though it's understood amongst both of them.
Yeah, they're sharing assumptions.
They're sharing the assumption that activities are the ones that enable us to understand. And so you are saying, means the conservatives are saying that, you are saying that settled facts don't have the denotative power because there is no activity to enable us, which we all agree that activity is necessary to enable us.
Yes.
And then next they're saying that or because it's subordinate to an activity. So I think they're covering,
I'm sorry, what are they saying, second?
Because they're dependent on, their denotative power is dependent on activities. So even if they denote something, it's because they are actually connected to activities. In other words, they're saying that their denotative power is subordinate to activities because they're dependent on activities, ultimately. So the assumption still holds. So I think, like in the beginning you said, that there could be the third possibility also. But I think the conservatives are trying to cover all possibilities by these two statements.
Is there an activity or not?
Yeah. So either directly.
And if there's no activity, okay, there's your problem. If there is an activity hiding behind the scenes, then really there's no problem. It's one or the other. Either there is an activity or there isn't. But there's two different things being talked about. There's karya and there's vyavahara. Vyavahara is more general. That's all activities. And karya is something that hasn't been done yet. When you see the boy bring the cow, that's not an injunction anymore. That's carrying out the injunction. The sentence is an injunction, bring the cow. But the activity of bringing the cow is it's happening. It's a fact. That's different. So it's not excluded. It's not A or the opposite of A. Number two is not exactly the opposite of number one. You could squeeze in a third possibility because they're not exact opposites.
I think they're not saying in the sense of opposite or just another possibility. I think they're including all the possibilities.
But how do you include all the possibilities? If I say, it's not a cow, it's not a duck. But cow and duck don't exclude all the possibilities. Maybe it's a horse. Yeah, if I say it's not a cow and it's not a cow, then I've excluded all the other possibilities, if they're opposites. If I say there is no activity or there is an injunctive activity, you could still squeeze in a third possibility. There's an activity, but there's no injunction. That could be a third possibility.
If you keep the denotative power of the vakya, which itself, they began speaking like that, if we keep that at the focus, then it would be, rather than speaking in terms of activities, it would mean either directly or indirectly, and that covers everything. So either directly they don't have denotative power, or either you're saying they don't have denotative power because
at
directly
all.
Can't.
They don't have any denotative power, or they have an indirect denotative power.
Yes,
that's it. Those are the two possibilities. You're saying there's no denotative power. Do you really mean literally there's no denotative power, or could you mean that there's no direct denotive power? It's implied. Yeah. Okay, I guess that would cover all the ground. Yes. Does it? Is there a third possibility? There's no direct denotive power, or there isn't any direct denotive power. I guess that covers all the possibilities.
We say there's no denotive power. I'm not denying that, but what do you mean by it? That there's no denotive power at all, or that there is some kind of indirect denotive power? That's the two possibilities.
Indirect? Yeah, like the words don't say it, but there's an unspoken implied activity, which is actually an injunction. Like the very way back in your childhood, when you heard, bring the cow. That's hiding behind the scenes. Even when you say, how much does this cow cost? That's not an injunction, but it has behind that is that injunction you heard when you were 3 years old. That's the second possibility. That there's no direct injunction, but there's a implied one. Now, okay, can we move on? Okay, that's one sentence. Let's move on. Putras te, and we've done it three or four times already. Let's move on. Putras te jata ityadi vakya janyasya pitradi shrotri vyavahara mukha vikashadir darshanat. I'm sorry, it said nadyaha. It's not the first one. Conservatives are saying, okay, here's two possibilities, but it can't be the first possibility. Why? Okay, translation. It can't be the first, since we see that statements like a son has been born to you create a radiant face in the father and other effects in the hearers of similar statements. Okay, counterexample. You say the possibility is supposed to be that there is no activity to let you know what's going on. But when you say a son has been born to you, we see something happen. We didn't tell, okay, smile now, but he smiles anyway. It's natural. Son has been born, he smiles. Unless he wanted a daughter, whatever. But normally, son has been born, it makes somebody smile. So there is activity, even in coming from a statement of fact. So that possibility is ruled out. Is that a satisfactory argument? Yes? Well, there's a vyavahara created by the statement of fact.
Created, but yeah. I think the whole argument is about karya, not about vyavahara. That the karya should be hiding in the statement, not vyavahara.
Well, we're talking about a statement that supposedly isn't connected with the karya. What's wrong with a statement that's not connected with the karya? Well, there is no karya. We know that already. We're saying this is a statement with no connection to a karya. What's the problem? What's wrong with that? Why can't you have such a statement? Why can't it have significant meaning? So the one possibility is that you can't figure out what it means because there's no activity. Not only is there no karya, there's no activity. You're just stating a fact, and nothing happens without something happening for you to see. You can never learn what it means. You could have never learned what it means unless something, some visible activity as response, actually what's implied is there's a response to the statement in an activity. And if there isn't any, then you can't figure out what the activity, what the sentence means.
Now they might argue back that father may smile for many reasons, not just for the son's getting, so
yeah,
you cannot figure out
maybe
still
he just
what it
has
means.
A stomach ache and he's burping, you know.
So still you cannot figure out what it means. It's just too broad. The vyavahara, if there is a vyavahara in statement, it makes...
There's not a vyavahara in the statement. Let's say what's proper here.
Okay.
Although the sentence said in the vyavahara, in the city there's no vyavahara, but what we really mean, according to what's described next, it doesn't create a response of an activity.
Then just by seeing the response it's hard to figure
like,
out.
Like I tell you,
still.
I tell you, the whole universe was created by Brahman. And I say, the Mimamsaka says, so what? Who cares? That doesn't create a response. Nothing happens because Brahman created the universe. Of course, we say the injunction is worship him. But they don't care about that. They say it's insignificant when the Upanishads tell us that the Lord created the heaven and the earth.
There's no activity as a response, so it doesn't make any difference.
I just want to stick to this example of the father. Like, so what? He smiles. That besides meaning that there might be a son born to him, it may mean thousand reasons why he would smile. And
well, okay, you could drag the argument on like that. Yeah. Fortunately, these two parties don't do that. It just gets more complicated if you start bringing things like that. You know, it is likely evidence that the man is sitting there, he's not smiling, and then you come to him and say your son has just been born, he starts smiling. It's likely there's a connection between the son being born and his smiling. It may not, there may be possibility that it's just coincidental, but there's some probability that he's responding to the fact of his son being born. Probability. That's sort of getting picky.
You can understand that there is some good thing happened to that man, and it kind of directs you to some understanding at least.
Okay, but what's the good thing that's making him smile? Likely candidate is the just announced birth of the son. It's a likely candidate.
So you may hit the correct thing.
It's likely. So it's not certain, but...
But this is what they're basing their arguments on.
Yeah, the argument is not so extremely strict logic. The logic is not that tight. And it's not our business to make it tight. This is their business. They're talking to each other. They're talking a little, their logic is a little sloppy. That's not our fault. Yes?
If we have to give a good example, a Krishna conscious example of this, for example, it might be two different facts. Like one fact is we find in several places, Krishna's lotus feet is the only shelter for those suffering in this burning forest of material existence. This is a fact. There is no intention in this.
Fact and so what?
And
there Who cares?
Is another fact is every living entity in this world is suffering with janma, mrtyu, jara, vyadi and all the kleshas, adi, bodhika, adi.
Yes.
So this is also a fact. But if you put together these two, that we are suffering, so then it implies that we have to take shelter. The injunction can be implied with several facts combined together.
Yes, it's a very good argument. But the Mimamsas are not going to be talking like that. Because that would violate their assumptions. So to protect their assumptions, they won't touch any talk about devotional service. Because it will ruin their whole sampradaya. So to protect the sampradaya, they have to avoid devotional talks. What you say makes perfect sense, but it's not what they're going to say. And this is an internal discussion between two parties of Prabhakaras.
Internal discussion?
Internal. It's between...
Internal.
Internal. This is family business, between one group of Prabhakaras and another. Yeah.
Because just as we've been spending last 3 or 4 classes on this, actually, they're spending their whole lives discussing this.
At least we'll be done with it, and they can continue arguing. But let's finish it. Let's move on. Okay. Na chatrapi tampasha ityadikam karyam kalpyam tat kalpaka abhavat. Okay. Nor can it... Oh, I skipped a sentence. Sorry. Napi dvitiya. Tat napi dvitiya karya samsargitvasya putra janma dav abhavat. Okay, we're done with the first option. We've dismissed it. Now we move on to the second option. There it gets more complicated. It's not the second option that there's actually a hidden injunction there, even in a statement of fact. Because, okay, I'll read the translation. Nor can it be the second, because in such ideas as the birth of the son, there is no link to something that needs to be done. Okay, right? The idea is simply son has been born. Nothing's being said about doing anything, right? So we're saying, no, there isn't any link. There's no connection with something to be done. You're just saying a son has been born, period. Go ahead. But I don't want to get too far. I want to move ahead, but go ahead.
I just want to clarify for myself. But there are some statements which imply some activity. For example, this food is not fresh means don't eat it.
Oh, yes.
Correct?
No. Yeah, certainly many statements of fact may be hiding injunctions. Like, you want to be polite. You don't want to just bark at people and say, do this, do that. No, you make a statement. This food is not really fresh. Instead of saying, you idiot, go bring me some other food. Instead of being blunt, you be polite and say, you know, this is, you know, sir, there's a waiter, there's a fly in my soup. Yeah, you be polite about it. Yeah. So therefore, you imply an injunction. When you mean to say an injunction, you might, rather than just bark at somebody, make a statement of fact that implies it. Sir, there's a big truck about to hit you. You know, you're telling him, get out of the way. Okay, so yes, many cases you're implying an injunction in some statements of fact. But what we're saying here, what the second option is saying, is that it's always the case that every statement in fact is implying an injunction. That's a stronger statement. It's always true. Whatever you say in a statement of fact, there's always somewhere in the background, in the past or hidden, implied, an injunction. Always. Okay, now why is this not possible? Well, because here's a case where it's not true. If you say it's always, something is always true, all you have to do is give one example where it's not. And you've canceled the statement. You know, all apples taste good. Well, here's a rotten apple. Taste it. And that one apple is enough to disprove your statement. One rotten apple. So one case of a matter of a statement of fact that doesn't have any connection with the thing to be done, that's enough to disprove the assumption that there's always a statement of fact, always an injunction there. And it said that this statement that a son has been born doesn't really have any link to something that needs to be done. Okay? Moving on. Natchatrapi tampasha ityadikam karyam kalpyam tat kalpakabhavat. Okay, that's the last easy sentence, and then we fall off the cliff onto the waterfall. Then it becomes tough after that. This sentence makes sense. In the second case, we should not presume something that needs to be done, such as look at him, because there are no grounds for this presumption. There's no reason to make the presumption. You're just grabbing at a presumption, but there's nothing to make you do it. There's no justification for doing it. I just said a son has been born. I didn't say anything about looking at him. Okay, now the answer, and now this sentence has still got me puzzled. It's just too complicated. Pratimika karyanvata shakti graha nupapatir eva tatkal piketi chait na. Chait is the end of a purvapaksha. Purvapakshas can begin with nanu, or they can be marked by ending them with chait, if. So is it the case, or is it because, is such and such the kalpika of that? Is it such and such that's the grounds for making the assumption? Is the reason for making the assumption that there is anupapati of graha? What is graha? Shakti graha? What is shakti graha? You're grasping the meaning of a statement. What is anupapati? What is upapati? Which? No, technical meaning and logic. It's a reason. Upapati is a reason. Remember, upakrama upasamharao, the seven lingas were telling what the purport of a whole account is? Many things are discussed. How do you know what the real topic is, the main topic? You look at what was said in the beginning, what was said in the middle, at the beginning and at the end. Other reasons, and one of them is called upapati. A logical reason is called an upapati. Or yukti, a synonym. Yukti upapati. Reason, a logical reason. One second. Now, anupapati would mean what? Lack of a reason. There not being any reason. Failure of proof, but no. This is a special kind of... That means that, but there's technically something even more than that. Which? Irrelevancy. No. There's something technical. Remember, there's a kind of... if Devadatta is fat, but we don't see him eating during the day, what do we assume? Okay, that's a special kind of logic. In Aristotelian terms, it's called a negative hypothetical deduction. No, this is conclusive. It's conclusive. This is good logic. Devadatta must be eating at night because he's fat and we don't see him eating during the day. But it's not a simple deduction. It's a deduction that goes, it's negative and positive, it goes backwards and forwards, it involves two steps. It's a complicated deduction. It has a technical name in Sanskrit. It's a special kind of, it's actually one of the 10 kinds of pramanas. Anyata anupapati. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. Anupapati means not making sense, but this is an abbreviation for the pramana that's called anyata anupapati. We presume something because what we see can't be explained without presuming it. Without presuming Devadatta is eating at night, we can't explain how he's fat. That's called anyata, otherwise no explanation. So that's what we mean by anupapati here. It's short, abbreviation for anyata anupapati. There's the same application of the same kind of logic about pratimika karya anvita shakti, graha. The grasping of the meaning of a statement that has syntactic connection with something that needs to be done, karya anvita. Anvaya is the logical or syntactic connection of words in a sentence. The statement has some syntactic connection with an action that needs to be done. That's pratimika. Pratimika means what? What? No, something else. What does it mean literally? That it comes first. Comes first in what sense? You say come first in sense of importance, but that's not what it means here. Here we're talking about... What? Well, it means the first time you ever learned what the word means. The very first occurrence of you understanding what the word is, what the word means. That means when you learned for the first time what the word means. That's the pratimika. Shakti Graha, the first time you caught the meaning of the word, when you learned as a boy what it meant. So there's no way to explain that without assuming an injunction. If there wasn't an injunction, you couldn't have had such an occurrence of you, the little boy, learning what the word means or what the statement means. That's the logic of Devadatta must be eating at night because we don't see him eating during the day. There must be hiding somewhere an injunction, because otherwise you could have never learned what that statement means. You know what it means now, means because you learned when you were younger what it meant, and now you're just hearing it again. But you could not have learned it as a young boy without seeing somebody bring a cow or whatever, or somebody smile after having a son born. You may not see it now, but you must have seen somebody... You must have seen the response of somebody looking at his son. You know, look at him. Well, you must have actually seen, when you were a three-year-old boy, you actually did see somebody come and tell somebody else, your son is born, why don't you take a look at him? You actually did have that happen, and you saw him look at him. So that's how you learned it in the first place, what this means. There was an injunction, at least when you first learned what the sentence means.
Okay? Because otherwise you can't explain how you could have ever learned what it meant. Yes. That's what makes you presume an injunction, because otherwise you can't explain how you could have ever known what this sentence means.
But do these radicals, do they presume that all words, they are learned only in childhood?
All words are what? Learned in childhood?
Yeah.
No, you can still learn some more words. But most of the ordinary words we use, not sentences, most of the stock of things we use in our language, we learned when we were little children. We may learn some more words and some more sentences, but most of the language we use, we learned before we were 7 years old. That's just a fact. Okay, I don't want to go too far from this tangent. I want to get into the sentence. Anyway, if you're using a sentence and you know what it means, you must have learned previously what it means. Maybe when you were 3 years old, maybe when you were 33 years old. But you learned it before because now you hear it and you know what it means. It means there must have been a time in the past when you learned what it means. No?
For example,
if I say something in Swahili, you won't know what it means because you never learned it. You never learned any Swahili.
I can show mobile phone to some person. Mobile phone. And I will say, this is mobile phone.
You can teach me. You can teach me. And then the next time I hear about mobile phone, I'll know what it means because you taught me now. But there has to be a first time when you learn what it means. That's all.
Yeah, but I didn't imply any activity. I just said, this is like mobile phone.
I know. Yes, I know that. And that's what we're going to say in the end. But for the meanwhile, we're following their assumptions that you can't do that. You can do it, but they're assuming you can't. That's the whole assumption of the whole Jaimini school, is you can't simply learn what something means just by saying that's such and such. Silly, but let's humor them and follow their assumption. Okay? I know it doesn't make sense, but that's what they believe. Okay? That's their religion. They believe it. I don't want to insult somebody else's religion. Yes.
Another example to support what they're saying is, for example, in our Harinamamrita, we are learning sutras, but until we practice them, until we derive forms and all, we won't understand properly. We have to keep practicing. So learning the sutra is just like giving the facts, and practicing and working out and deriving is like an activity. So maybe, based on this understanding, maybe that they might propose this, that only activity will, in a sense, give them full realization of the...
Yes, yes. Yes, there's the psychological reasons, practical reasons why they make this assumption. The only thing is, it's not true. It's true sometimes, but not all the time. Okay, let's move on. We only have 10 minutes. Or we have more time? Because there's no class following? Okay, but let's finish the paragraph. Okay, again, just to recapitulate, I'll read the translation again of this sentence. In the second case, we should not presume that something needs to be done, such as look at him, because there are no grounds for this presumption. I'm just saying son is born. There's nothing in there, there's nothing that implies look at him. Now, the answer is, the radical says, one may suggest that the ground for such a presumption is that without it, one could not have had a first recognition of the meaning of the words, a meaning which should have been linked to something needing to be done. That's all following their assumptions. Okay, answer to that, this is the complicated one. Okay. What's wrong with making this logic that there must have been an implied assumption? Well, no. Karyanvite vakye shakti graha siddhe. Karyapada eva karyanvita abhavena vyabicharat. Yogetaranvitatva matrena sangati grahopapatau visheshana vayartyat cha. Now you have hetu clauses here. Hetu is expressed by what cases? Which fifth and third? Fifth or third case can express reason, right? Ablative or instrumental. Now we have graha siddhe. Well, that can be also ablative. That is ablative. So you have three ablatives here. Asiddhe is ablative, fifth case. Vyabhicharat is fifth case. And vayartyat cha is fifth case. Now that can be three different reasons. Or two reasons, and one of them is a reason for the reason. Or rather, there's one basic reason, and there's two reasons for that basic reason. Now, I ended up taking it that there's actually only one reason, and then that reason has two reasons. Let's see if I'm right about that. Maybe I was wrong about that, and that's why it doesn't make so much sense. Maybe we have three separate reasons. I don't think so, but maybe I'm wrong. Yes? To the point.
The first time I read these last four paragraphs,
yes,
I understood as if there was four reasons. English.
Where did you see four of them?
But
I only see three ablatives here. Do you see a fourth one?
Yeah. Well,
where did you see the fourth one?
In the last paragraph.
Oh, nacha karye karnanvita tramastiti vacham?
No, I'm just saying in the English. The way you put it in English, it seemed as there was.
You mean the English makes it sound like there are four reasons?
Yeah, and then, but then when you go to the purport,
then it's sorted out.
You just mentioned three reasons.
Okay, you have to show me this.
So
let's look at the English. Yes.
So, I mean, when we go through it, then I'll explain after.
Okay. If we're mistakenly making the reader think from the translation that there's four reasons, we have to correct that. But we have to make sure we got the right count of reasons, that there's two and not three, at least. Let me read the translation I have there right now. And that may have to be fixed. It may be not exactly right. But no, the reason given that the capacity for meaning is found only in statements that relate to action is not even valid, since in a sentence the very word that expresses the action is not connected through other words with something that needs to be done. Now what I've done here is given a reason and then a reason for the reason. So I've taken the first and second ablative to be one reason and then the reason for that reason. The reason why I did that is that if you just say the first thing, because there is no... What? Because... I'm sorry. No. I'm sorry. The reason given that the capacity for meaning is found only in statements that relate to action is not even valid. Well, if I say only that, they won't accept that. That goes against their assumption. Or it goes against the assumption of that is the assumption of the radicals. So that's not fair. You know, the conservatives are saying you radicals are wrong because we don't accept your assumption. But then you're just arguing over belief. It doesn't prove anything. So that's why I didn't take it that this is by itself a statement of the reason. We've got to give a reason why. Why do you say that? So since in a sentence the very word that expresses the action is not connected through other words with something that needs to be done. Wow. Okay, now. Hetu is a reason, right? There's smoke, there's fire on the mountain because there's smoke there. The reason is wherever there is smoke, there is fire. That's the reason. Hetu. It's a generalization. Now here we have a generalization. The capacity for meaning, I'm sorry. The capacity for meaning is found only in statements that relate to action. That's our so-called general reason, purpose, reason, hetu. We're saying it's not valid. We say asiddha. It's a technical term in nyaya. Hetu abhas, faulty reason. Like I say, there's fire around the mountain because wherever there's a green light, there's fire. And there may be a green light. There may be a traffic light on top of the mountain, and it may be green. But it's not true that wherever there's a green light, there's a fire. Maybe sometimes there's a fire next to some green lights, but it's not a general law that wherever there's a green light, there's a fire. So if I give that as my reason, it's called asiddha. Your reason isn't true. At least it's not true all the time, and you're giving it as a universal statement. It may be circumstantially true sometimes, but it's not true in general. That's called asiddha, hetu abhas. You give a reason that isn't true. So it's not going to prove what you want to prove, because it's just not true. So we're saying that this reason, that the capacity of meaning is found only in statements that relate to action, is not true. It may be true many of the times, but it's not true in general. Because here is a counterexample. And now this confuses me. This is supposed to be an example where the capacity of meaning is found only in statements that relate to action. But now we're talking about words. We're talking about a sentence. Okay. Since in a sentence, I guess as any sentence, the very word that expresses the action is not connected through other words with something that needs to be done. Wow. What does that mean? Okay, you got a sentence. Take any sentence. Sentence should have a verb, right? Maybe implied, but there should be a verb in every sentence. Well, we said there's shakti only in relationship, the sentence has shakti only in relationship to something that needs to be done. Well, okay, but there's a loophole, there's an exception. If you break it down into words, all the other words are connected to the verb by some syntactic connection, right? Karaka or oop or some connection, directly or indirectly. Some words are connected directly to the verb, they're called karakas. Other words are connected to other nouns, they're upapadas. But the nouns are connected to the verb, so indirectly they're connected to the verb. What about the verb itself? Its meaning is not connected to any other word in the sentence. Not by syntax. So this idea that in general, meaning of sentences and of words together, because they're mixed in together in this theory, meaning of words and sentences is only in connection with something that needs to be done, but the verb itself is not syntactically connected to any other idea or word. Therefore, the rule is not universal. That's the argument. Does it make sense? Yes?
Well, it's a further argument, but it's in relation of this. But it's a little
Let's not go off into something else. We have to settle. Does this make sense? Let's answer the question. We can discuss other things after we figure out what this means. Unless you're going to answer, what does this make sense, and what does it actually mean? Yes, or you can say no, it doesn't make sense to me. There's something wrong with it.
I say it makes sense because
you think it does make sense.
It makes sense.
Can you explain it to us?
Because their argument was that because there is no, the shakti graha is dependent on having anvaya with karya.
Yes.
So now.
But that's shakti graha of the whole sentence.
Yeah, of a sentence.
Now we're raising an objection about a single word, the verb.
Yes, I think it's consistent because that is what they said. Now the conservatives are saying, okay, we'll accept what you're saying. Even if we, for argument's sake, if we say only that has karya anvaya can give shakti graha, then the argument will be that if you make a statement which has a karya anvaya, then it won't have any shakti, that itself doesn't have any shakti graha because of the kriyapada not having any connection with a verb, not having any connection with a karya.
Well, of course the karya pada, the word that expresses the injunction, like bring, that word, that's expressing an injunction directly. But we're arguing, yeah, but it doesn't have any syntactic connection with another word that expresses an injunction.
Yeah, because you're stressing the word anvaya.
You know, it has a direct meaning of injunction, but it has no anvaya there. There's no connection with any other word.
Yeah.
How does the word make sense? Our theory is that words have meaning only in connection with other words. But the verb doesn't have any connection with any other word in a sense. Therefore, it doesn't have any meaning.
Yeah.
The verb can't mean anything because it's not syntactically connected to the other words.
A little later, you write in the commentary that the presumption is that the capacity for meaning is found only in statements that relate to actions is wrong, for the imperative verb is independent of other words in the sentence to express the main idea,
yeah,
that is bringing or milking,
yeah,
and that in its turn would make the verb a siddhapada, a word related to a certain fact, let it even be an action. Actions expressed by verbs are as much things as the things expressed by nouns.
Yeah, but Matsya Babu, on the basis of the grammarian's theory, objects to that, to calling the action a thing. Calling a verb a siddhapada, Matsya didn't like that.
Yeah, but this is not grammar.
Well,
something,
yeah, but
something.
It's based on grammar. We're using grammatical arguments here.
But isn't it that they don't just argue with grammar, but on the top of grammar, they also kind of tinge the grammar with their conceptions.
Yeah, but I don't think they threw the grammar away to do it. I mean, I'm just saying I shouldn't use the word things there. And it was my idea to call the verb a siddhapada. If Panini and his friends don't like that, I think I'd better not get them angry and not call it that, call it something else. I should change the commentary so I don't. You say things that grammarians would object to. Yes. So here I see that paragraph from the commentary needs some modification. What about the translation itself? Can it stand? Can it make some? Does it make enough sense? Do you understand it? But no, the reason given, that the capacity for meaning is found only in statements that relate to action, is not even valid. Since in a sentence, the very word expressing the action is not connected through other words with something that needs to be done. Well, is that good enough? I don't think I can do any better. I don't think I can make it any clearer without saying something that Jiva Goswami didn't say, and that the Prabhakaras didn't say. That's it. I mean, it's not absolutely clear, but I think that the Prabhakaras weren't absolutely clear. So what can I do with it?
So
yes?
In our discussion, the Vishaya at the particular moment is the sentences. But we are going even in depth of the words and trying to prove back to the...
Well, that's okay. I think it's okay in the Prabhakara theory because they... For them, meaning of words and meaning of sentence are mixed together. The meaning of the words is not separate from the meaning of the sentence. So we can talk about both in their theory.
He is giving an example of this verb.
Yeah.
That verb is in turn itself is not connected to other words, but still it makes sense. Similarly, the sentences which are not injunctions, they imply an activity, but still they need not be connected to other sentences which are implying the injunctions directly.
Or the very assumption... Why is it true? Because here's a case where it isn't true.
So he's taking this particular example of grammatical syntactic connection and then trying to prove backwards the thing which he wants to say, that the sentences which do not imply, I mean, which are just fact, need not be, invalid or something like
that. Right, by giving a counterexample. A counterexample to the universal rule that every statement has to refer, or even every meaning has to be in connection with... Meaning of a statement or meaning of a word has to be in connection with a thing to be done has to be in grammatical, syntactic connection. Okay, but it's not always true. It's not true even in any sentence in the verb. It's not true. So your assumption has been contradicted by a counterexample. The conservatives have shown that the radical's assumption is not true. Yes. And then Kishore.
I don't know if this makes the argumentation more clear. Like, the radicals were arguing that to have any denotative power, it depends on actual some activity. So indirectly implying some activity, that's one thing. So,
yes.
But the conservatives, I think they are being more liberal, and then they are saying, why indirectly? Let's take a more strong case. Let's take a sentence which directly has a verb right there in the sentence.
Yeah.
And then they're proving that sentence itself is lacking because the kriyapada doesn't have an anvaya with any
yes,
other
yes.
word.
Yes.
So in that very case where the activity is right there indicated in the sentence itself fails, then what to speak of sentences which are only indirectly.
Makes sense. Hare Krishna. One second. I'm just trying to... Should we move on and read the rest of this paragraph? Okay, you want to make your comments. Kishore Prabhu.
Is this presumption true that verb has no connection with other words? Because if other words have connection with the verb, how can we say that? What's the connection then if we say there is no connection?
Yeah. I mean, if the karakas are connected to the verb,
yeah, so
why can't we say the verb is connected to the karakas?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but it has to be a connection with... The verb is connected to the other words, but we need to get a connection to a thing that needs to be done. We're going to find a thing needs to be done expressed by a verb, not by a noun. So the verb being connected with nouns and other words isn't going to help us.
So we
need the verb to be connected maybe to another verb.
To a verb.
Oh. To a verb, for something that expresses an action that needs to be done. But only verbs are going to do that. So where are you going to connect the verb? To another verb? Or to itself? Or to nothing? So we got a problem here.
Okay.
Actually, it will be suggested, connected to another implied injunction. You know, a previous injunction. But that, because you've got to have some connection. A syntactic connection. And the verb doesn't have one. It has syntactic connection to the nouns and the other words, but that's not a connection with an action, an idea of an action that needs to be done.
I have a suggestion.
This is making more sense now.
Yeah. I have a suggestion to this sentence, but not the reason given that the capacity for meaning is found only in statements that relate to actions is not even valid. Since in a, this is my suggestion, injunctive sentence, a sentence that tells something that needs to be done, the very word that expresses the action is not connected with other words with something that needs to be done. Because now we're speaking in the sentence itself, in the sentence that gives the injunction.
Well,
the verb itself is not connected with another injunction.
You know, I'll accept that because we're talking about the Sanskrit says karyapada. And karya is not kriya, it's not just activity. Karya, in this argument, means action that needs to be done. So, I'll accept to add the word injunctive. And then, injunctive, I'm going to add it right now. Okay, you're right. Because the word in the Sanskrit is karya. That means an injunction or an expression of something that needs to be done. Okay, good.
And my question is that, so all these following reasons that we're going to see are, we're just speaking about the second case.
Yes.
The second
first
case
has been dismissed already.
Yeah. Okay. But so in your purport, in your purport to this argument about the verb that Nityananda just read, you bring in the first hypothesis about why would a settled fact not have denotative power, which is that you learned it like when you were young.
Yeah.
So this last few sentences, you bring in that conception, but it seems confusing because we're dealing with two different hypotheses.
I understand.
Understand?
I'm bringing in the first option when we've already dismissed it.
Yeah. So that's why maybe, it brings some confusion.
Okay, let me make a note of that.
Yeah.
You're right.
Okay.
I have to write it down. Okay, we're going to stop here and continue this tomorrow. Any questions before we stop? Okay, stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.